From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We are down here in South Texas sitting around a table, and we have Mr. Albert Simpson with us, and Jeff is here as well. So we're just wrapping up our South Texas job, and it's the very last night. The trucks are loaded, finally, and the trailers are loaded, and we just had wonderful supper prepared by Albert's wife Barb from back home. We had heat 'em and eat 'ems, as Albert calls them. And when I first got here, I looked on the shelf and Albert had a bunch of canned food, canned chili and vegetable beef stew and stuffed peppers. And I thought, what is all of this stuff? And it's turned out to be really good. So we call them heat 'em and eat 'ems. So we had that tonight. And we just thought we'd jump on and do a quick show with Albert and just reflect back on our time. And Albert can tell some stories about this ranch and how he got here. And we'll just kind of see where it goes. So I guess we better thank our sponsors, which are F&T, everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. And then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies out of Iowa, and with Alan there. So he has just about everything you need for everything, or he can find it.
Fishing.
Yep, he's got quite a bit of fishing stuff.
And if you're into catfishing, Alan, like, is a fanatic on the catfishing.
Yes.
Which we found out on the cleanse on the 4th of July weekend.
Yes, he is.
And he catches a crab out of them.
Yes. And he, yep.
And so he sells some, like, I never seen them before, like some hooks and stuff that, you know, I don't know. I didn't catch one, and he caught probably about 50, so.
Yeah.
Unless the limit was only 25, then he only got 25.
Yeah, right. So, anyway, well, Albert, thank you. First, thank you for having us down here. It's been an absolute pleasure, and so many experiences down here that I'll forever be grateful for and remember forever. Just everything about Texas has been new and. So I just thank you for inviting us down and letting us be part of this. And sitting down on the last day of the trip, it's been hot, it's been long. You've definitely had some struggles this month. And
technically, we invited ourselves.
Well, yeah, I didn't know how to word that.
And it worked out good because I was in bad shape. I was down and out. I had to have help, and they showed up.
Yeah. Yep.
God answers prayers. Mm-hmm. I wrecked my truck.
Yep.
And I was down and had no way to get around. And I had to borrow a truck off the ranch to go get groceries. And I stayed right here on the ranch and trapped. And they came down, and I was trying to fight the insurance companies and stuff. But when you go out on the fence line, you ain't got no service. So between me and my wife, we got it worked out. But when I started out down here, I started with Clint. I went to his trapping advanced school. Of course, I see these articles in the magazines and stuff, but I got to read them, and the more I read them, I thought, oh, we got a new kid on the block because he's just starting. And the more I read them, I went to PA convention and met him. And I kind of just followed him, and They put a trapping school on, advanced trapping in Ohio. I went to it. And then the next year he was had another one scheduled in Kentucky. And he had basically the same instructor. So I thought, well, I ain't going to that. And I called him, was talking to him, and he asked me if I've ever been to Texas trapping. I said, no. He told me about predator control school he's putting on. So he signed me up to it. And when I got down there, was down there for a week at Lambadera trapping school. And I told him whenever we got done, I said, you're going to have to tell me to go home, because as long as you're staying, I'm staying. The school was a week. And I know he had more than that, just a week of school. Had more trapping than that. I know he was down there for 30 days. So I didn't go home. Everybody else left. I stayed with Clint. Yeah, and he never told me no. That's what I just know that sooner or later he's going to tell me hit the road, but he never said I could or I couldn't. So I stayed. And me and him just hit it off. And I told him the next year I wanted to come back and do the same thing. I said, I pay my own way like I did this time. And he never answered me. And then he told me he didn't need me. So about a weekend after school started, or right before school started, he told me, left me a message if I wanted a trap to come on down. He could use me. So I called him to see what's up. And he told me, come on down. I went down. I wanted to be a foothold trapper. I didn't want to be a snare. First thing he did was put me on the fence. And I hated it the whole time. But it turned out it was the best thing he could have done for me. I love snaring. I'd rather set a snare than hang a set a trap. Mm-hmm. And at the fence, when I get on the high fence, I'm going till dark every night. So I just keep on till I run out of places to set them. Once I get the fence set, then I run them. Every day I'd check and add more until I got the whole thing done. But Clint, while school was going on, it seemed like when I get one pasture field done, he would switch on me. Maybe about the third or fourth day I've had it set. And he'd take the students over on my line and send me on a line that's already been run several days. And I know the line was just starting to connect, really catching stuff. And there he is, seeing what I've done. I wanted to see that. I wanted to be the first one to see what was going on. I wanted to see the big catches. But it all worked out in the end. I stayed with him. I was down there 4 years trapping with him, helping him with the school. And I always stayed from start to the beginning and stayed to the end. And whenever he quit, I went to back down, and I was looking for another place to go. And I found one, but it wasn't very big. And I went with Norm and him to another ranch. And we trapped it and come back. And I got a good friend with that ranch. And I tried to talk him into letting me come back. But they had two other trappers. They wasn't interested. But the very next year, he called me. Said, if you're still interested, come on down. And I was already had a Lambadera to trap. So me and my buddy come down here after we went to Lambadera. And we was down here for like 4 or 5 years. And it's been a good one. So I really enjoy snaring. These high fences, I can't get away from them. If there's a high fence, I find it, and I can set snares, I'm going.
And a lot of people would say, well, that's got a crawl under, and you just, you know, put the snare in there, and, you know, you're going to catch. There's art to, you know, just like everything else, there's an art to, you know, putting it in there and catching something. I mean, it's not just, you know, just slap the snare in. Because, I mean, if you put it in there, you know, you could come back and every snare would be knocked down.
Yeah, you got to put them on there right and stuff. There's more to it than you think there is.
Yeah, being my first time doing the high fence, there definitely is an art to it. I mean, from getting the support set just right and sturdy enough, and how big do you make your loop to catch the right animal. And I mean, you're also dealing with road runners here, rabbits, jackrabbits.
Lots of rabbits.
Tons of rabbits. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff running through that fence, and to keep your snare working.
Just like I told you about the one down there yesterday that I had the snare too big, and that cat walked right through it. And I mean, you're only talking about a 7-inch snare, but I mean, he walked right through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and then some of the holes, the crawl unders, those cats do not need much room, and they're so nimble. I guess I don't know what other word to say, but they can just slide right through there and not touch nothing, and they don't need much room.
Because they're if you look at them, these cats down here, their head is wider than their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable the little space they could go through. Yeah. I wouldn't think a raccoon could get through there, but if that cat could go through.
But, yeah, with these high fences, you sit in snares, whatever there, you come through there, you're going to catch it. It could be raccoons. It could be, there's a few foxes, gray foxes in here. Wild boar, you catch them. Badgers, armadillos, skunks. Just about anything comes through there, you got a good chance of catching. And do catch them.
So you're getting to see a wide variety of animals. I mean, it's not just one thing.
Yeah, I just don't target calves. I sit there, and the rancher wants the coon kill because they're destroying their feeders, their high solar panels that's on the feeders. They're destroying them, and it costs money to replace them, plus someone to do it.
Yeah, because some coon got nothing else to do but, climb all over that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And coyotes, they kill the fawns and stuff in the spring, and they got a lot of money tied up in their deer. Big hunts come in. Got big racks on them.
Well, you definitely have a system down, and you're efficient with with getting out there and getting them set. And it's a lot of work.
I like to do a ranch 30 days. I think that if you hit it hard, 30 days, you're going to get the biggest part of them. You're going to get the coyotes and stuff right at the beginning of breeding season, and before the new ones can come in from the other side, it's going to be too late. This breeding season's over.
Yeah. So February is your preferred month?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried I did three ranches in a row, me and another guy. January, February, March, and February was a good year. Of course, all of them ranches hadn't been trapped. The people that was there told us to. Said, we've never seen so many deer have fawns. Said, we had a lot of twins and triplets. He said, we haven't seen that for years.
Mm-hmm.
That's because that's right when we hit them, and we hit them hard. 30 days we stayed there. I was setting foot snares, and my buddy was setting foot over the inside, and no matter where they turned, they was going to meet one of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, even this ranch here has quite a bit, a turkey population, and quail, and I know they've said that their quail is just booming.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys really had targeted the raccoons around here.
It's unbelievable to me that a raccoon can even survive in this country down here. I mean, it's mesquite, yeah, and cactus and everything, is trying to stab you or bite you or sting you. Mm-hmm. And you come down here in the last... I mean, when you're driving down the road and see the cactus everywhere, the last thing I'm thinking of is a raccoon. But mm-hmm. There's lots of them here, and it's surprising. Like, we skinned that one. How much fat was on that thing from eating the high-protein feed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, looking at it, I know when we first got here, it was mid-February... And it just looked like everything was dead out there. And you said, it's hard to believe there's so much life inside of all that. And there really is. I mean, the animals here are thriving.
Yeah, they are. There's tons of life out there. It looks dead as a doornail out there when you look at that mesquite. But there's just life everywhere out there because it's so tight a cover that they can hide and... It's unbelievable. It's a great place to visit the trap, but not a great place for me to live. No way.
It's hot.
Yeah, the 95 degree days trapping is like crazy.
Mm-hmm. And you never know where rattlesnake's going to be.
No.
They show up unexpected. Sometimes they rattle, sometimes they don't.
What'd you find? You found a key. You said when you come up on them, you keep your buggy running.
Yeah, I was on a four-wheeler or side-by-side now, but when I would find them, I shut the four-wheeler off, and they'd take off. So I had one across the road in front of me, and he stretched out. And I just left the four-wheeler run, and I got my gun, and I shot it. And I started doing that from then on. When I seen him, I left it run, and they just lay there. They didn't move. But it seems like if you turn that bike off, they leave in a hurry. So I don't know what it is, whether it's the vibration, the motor noise, or what, but it don't take them long to if you shut it off, they're leaving.
That one we had, he didn't leave super quick.
Mm-mm.
But there was a lot of gunfire going off. It was like the OK Corral gunfight. He didn't have a gun, but...
Yeah, it was the first rattlesnake I've ever seen in real life, in the wild, in the daylight. Me and Albert came back from town the night before, and we saw the back part, the end of a really big rattlesnake, just right here by the house. I was freaking out.
That's the second time I emptied a pistol and a rifle at a rattlesnake, and... I'm not sure I hit him. I get kind of jumpy when I'm shooting at rattlesnakes.
They don't even waste the bullets on them down here. Well, everybody carries a shovel.
Yeah. Yeah. All of us from up north all agree the gun is the way to go.
Amen.
So when, like we know you don't just target just the cats, you know, you're targeting whatever comes through, but like, what was the most cats you guys ever caught down here? And what, you know, what would it be, like 3 months?
When we trapped 3 months, me and Daryl caught 239 bobcats. And we only lost 6 of them because of the heat and stuff. The rest of them we held them and sold.
That's like a full-time job, just trying to get them back to the cooler.
Yeah,
Did you guys do you guys ever haul like coolers on your buggies or anything?
No. We just go when it starts getting hot and we get nervous. We just head for the cooler.
Yeah.
Put them in.
Yeah.
And on. We were both on four-wheelers then. It don't take on a four-wheeler to get down there and back, get back on the line.
Yeah, they go faster than 20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that is a lot of cats. A lot of cats.
And we had over 326 coyotes or something. It was unbelievable. But that's all we did for 90 days. New ranches. Some of them have been trapped for years. They were loaded. 16 coyotes one day off one ranch. That was the best we ever done.
And there wasn't a good one in the bunch.
No. According to the rancher, the only good one was a dead one, and he had lots of them.
Yeah, these things look really rough. I don't think I'd want a coat on one of these ones. But they still eat deer, and the people and the ranchers want them gone. Raccoons and coyotes are on the hit list, and bobcats.
Yep.
Basically, anything that eats deer feed or deer meat, they want gone.
Yeah, it causes damage to feeders or something.
Yep. He said, the one guy said, I don't care if you catch one or you catch 100. He says, that'd be one less I have to deal with.
Yeah.
We caught more than one.
Yep.
So, you talked about with the schools and stuff, you know, you went to, like, Clint School. What other schools did you go to?
I've been to Fort Texas College. I've been to Zager School. I've been to New Sterling Snare School. I took Fox instructions off of Pete Leggett. And I've been up and see Oscar Conk whenever he was around. That was one of my first places I went. Was up there for 3 days with him. And then I go to Montana. I got a good friend out there that trapped with the federal trappers. He just come out there and stayed. When the season was over, he didn't go home. He was like a mate. He just stayed there. And he stayed there and helped the federal trappers and stuff. And then his mother got sick and he had to go home. And he finally come back. And I got to be good friends with him when he was from Pennsylvania. And I come out and trap with him. Now, there's a piece of work. I don't know how he knows, but me and him's argued about where you're going to catch a coyote. I bet the ranch I'm going to have the coyote before him. And what he said the trap don't make no sense. But when we come back, there's the coyote dancing in his trap. He did that time and time again, and I never did figure out. He told me, over there, set the trap over there. I said, Charlie, I said, wrong. The air's coming this way. The coyote will never smell that. If he's in the creek, down by the creek, he ain't going to smell it. If he comes down that road, he ain't going to smell it. I set the trap wherever he wanted to set it. I set it. Come back, there was a coyote dancing. Hmm. And I still set that same place every time I went there. I set lots of them, same place where he set them. Mm-hmm. I reset them. And we going out there, and he gave me a notebook to keep track of what we was doing, the lures and all that stuff. So, and when I go out there, or whoever I'm trapping with, against, I'm trying to out-trap them. I want to be better than him, number-wise. And I don't mess with the traps. I don't play dirty. And we're out there trapping. We're out of the same vehicle. He gets out and sets his trap. I set mine. A lot of them, the earth anchors are already there. All we got to do is hook a trap to them. And we're going out through there, and he's got, I think he had about 13 coyotes, and I only had 8, but I was gaining on him. He just quit catching. He'd catching skunks, catching badgers, a few red fox, and we're going out there, and I killed had a coyote. And usually he gets out, and he's always got a story to tell about trapping with some of them federal trappers and other people. And he didn't get out this time. And I went out and I killed my coyote. And he got in, and we're going back to the, back out of the, driving out of the field. And he ain't saying nothing. And I thought, well, he must be mad or something. A little bit he said, I ain't talking to you the rest of the day. I said, why is that? He said, you won't let me catch no coyotes. I said, oh, you noticed, huh? He said, yeah. And of course, he had a few other words added to it. So I said, you know, Charlie, I seen a lot of pictures and heard a lot of stories about some pup coming out here from Pennsylvania, come out here and running with these old wolfers. I said, now you got a pup on your heel and you can't shake it. And I looked over, he just a grinning from ear to ear, but he never said nothing. Mm-hmm. But he knew these coyotes, there's no doubt about that.
Didn't they call his name, they call him out there Coyote Charlie?
Yeah, but everybody called him. They didn't know Charles Shanefelder. They knew Coyote Charlie. And he'd introduce me to everybody we come to. And I think he was setting me up because he knew I was coming back with something happened to him, that I'd be back to trap Montana, because mm-hmm. Texas and Montana is where I love. Mm-hmm. Every year I've been going there. I actually bought his little house and stuff. Whenever he went, his wife moved back to Pennsylvania. And that's where I stayed. Got there and spent almost a month. I stayed till the snow runs me out. Mm-hmm. Start mid-October. It's been quite a ride.
Well, you couldn't get two different areas to go to, Montana or South Texas.
No.
I mean, that's like the complete polar opposite.
Yeah. But Montana is mainly coyotes out here. Texas is just the opposite. You got coyotes, cats, coon, badgers, skunks, porcupines.
And this year, tons of hogs.
Yeah. I think I got 10 or 11 wild boar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a bunch of them on camera and couldn't keep them out of our sets. And, you know. They wander up to Arkansas, they'll be in trouble.
Yeah. I'll chase them that way.
All right.
Keep them out of the snares. If you ever get a chance to go out of state trapping, don't pass it up. No, it's worth the trip.
It definitely is. You always learn stuff.
Meet new people. You learn a lot about trapping other ways than what you know. Mm-hmm. Pick up a few points here and there and pass them on to the next guy.
Yeah. How long ago did you take Zagger's class? Quite a while ago?
Yeah.
Like one of his first ones?
No, he'd had, I think, two or three of them, maybe. Mm. But I read his article in the Trapping magazine, and I tried it, and I couldn't get it to work, and I read it again. He came to PA, I think it was a PA, but he was at a convention, and I watched his demo, and it didn't sink in. And I think he rewrote an article about a lot of people was writing in, they's having trouble, and he explained it more. So when he put the school on, I just called him. I'm coming, and I went to his school for 2.5 days it was. I went there, and when I left, I went on to Montana and trapped, and he set that pipe dream, he called it. I'm still living the pipe dream. I don't leave home without him.
Zagger's different than Clint. If you told Zagger I'm not leaving, he'd been like, yeah, you're leaving. when it's over, it's over.
Yeah, I stayed there for the school, and then as soon as it was over, I had my truck west.
Yep.
I couldn't wait to get started.
Yep.
And I use his set no matter where I go. I got the pipes with me. Montana, Texas. And if I was trapping at home, when I did trap at home, I had it. And they work.
Mm-hmm.
Took me a while to figure, but when I went to his school, I seen firsthand. I knew exactly what I was doing wrong. And the way he sets the trap is a good way to do it, too.
He definitely knows what he's doing. I mean, he's got that, pretty bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, the whole system, would that work here, like in South Texas? Putting the whole system in? Or was it, just like pulling parts of it out of, like using the pipe, but maybe you're not making it weatherproof because you don't have the rain.
Yeah, I don't bed the trap exactly like what he does down here. And look, if I was on some of the places we trap, if they brush hog out, I could set that just like he did.
Mm-hmm.
And hang.
Yep.
If I see a place like where they brush hog, I'll take something, go over, and I'll pick up a lot of old dead grass and stuff, and I'll go make me a set like that. But the trouble is here in Montana, the wind blows, and it blows that grass off. But other than that...
Mm-hmm.
And you can sprinkle a little bit of dirt, put that grass on there, sprinkle a little dirt to kind of help hold it. It works.
Yeah, and the wind blows the dirt off your sets too, so yeah. Down here. So I had quite a few. I had some traps where I didn't put enough dirt on them and dig the beds deep enough, because it's so damn hard. And
yeah.
Get there and the wind's blowing and blew the dirt right off the trap because it's just like powder and it's really bad now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like Albert said, if you get a chance to go out of state trapping, that's it's a lot of fun because it's when you're out of state trapping, it's all trapping all the time. That's all you have to do and skin and. You don't have all the daily stuff you have at home.
It doesn't mean everything goes perfect, though.
No, it doesn't.
No, it don't.
Things can turn south in a heartbeat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or a turn.
It's been a long time since I trapped Pennsylvania, and the main reason was because you got little tracts of land. You go out west or like down there on these ranches, you got thousands and thousands and thousands of acres. And usually one or two ranches is all you need. They'll keep you busy.
Yep. Yeah, like the ranch we went and looked at the other day, they said, we're sorry, you're welcome to trap and blah, 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 but... We only have 1,500 acres, which, it's like, well, you know, only. You only have 1,500 acres.
If I only had 1,500 you know. Acres.
When I go to Montana, they don't pay me a trip. I just go do it because I love it. And lots of them will let me do it. Because they want the coyotes killed too, because they bother their cattle in the spring when they're having kids.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trapping private land, different
yeah.
private
Yeah, I get land permission on permissions. About every property I go to.
Mm-hmm. Do you run into any other trappers up in Montana?
I've never run into any yet. Hmm. Game wardens checked me 3 times, and we get along good. And I ask them about other trappers, and they don't have anything to say about them. If they know, they ain't talking. But I've never run across another trapper out there.
Hmm. Yeah, you don't run into a lot of them down here in South Texas, but you never know who's on the other side of the fence yeah. or, you yeah. know.
You very seldom see anybody on the other side.
Yeah. Just weirdo animals. Me and Sarah come around the corner and here's these things that, like, you see on National Geographic in Africa running down the road. And I'm like, well, shit, they want to race. So they can run 26 miles an hour. I'm not sure what they are, but.
I can't remember. He even told us and I can't remember.
Yeah, the other things are, like, really weird. He said they were from, like, Iran or something. Or, no, India.
India, yeah.
Yeah, same area.
Yeah. But now they said you can buy them at, like, sales.
Yeah.
Stuff.
It was interesting because they said the Big King Ranch, they imported them things.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Hmm. So you say you also went to the Fur Takers College.
Yeah, I went to Fur Takers College. I think that was about, it was one of the last ones I went to.
Who all went to that one when you went through there?
Fur Takers?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't no one from around that I knew.
You didn't know anybody?
No, I didn't know anybody.
I always hear really good things about their program, yeah. you know, and, you know, they cover a lot of stuff. Some of it, you know, like you're not, you know, most people aren't going to trap mountain lions, you yeah. know, and stuff yeah. like that, but it'd be interesting to sit there and listen, you yeah. know, like, you know, Leon Smith, when he was, you know, doing a demo on, you know, trapping mountain lions, it was just interesting to listen to it, you know.
Yeah. But they have people coming out that, some of them are trapping like beaver in places and they're testing their blood and stuff, looking for disease and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of game wardens coming there. There are people that's just starting in the game commission. They're coming to learn how to trap and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are like that. And I talked to one lady. She was said there was 3 of them and she was from Hawaii. She said they take them out and drop them out of a helicopter land, you know, and they got to work their way back and they're checking animals and stuff. On their way back, whatever, walking, had to walk her way out. I thought that was pretty odd, a different way. Usually everybody just rides, but down there you don't ride. Hmm. They drop you, you gotta go out on foot.
Hmm. You tell me, you're old school. You need to ride.
Yeah. Yeah, Whistler Lambadere in when I got away from the lodge, I take my shirt off because it's hot. Because the poem, that's what a lot of people do. I wear hardly ever wear shit in summertime, unless I'm out in public. And I was going back to the lodge on the four-wheeler, and the cook, he was leaving. Next morning, he come in, and he walked over to him, and he said, "You're old school." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "I seen you with no shirt on." He said, "That's old school." He said, "We don't do that there anymore." I said, "Well, you come to Pennsylvania, you'll wish you were still doing it." So Clint started calling me old school from then on. And then the students got to call me old school. Once in a while I run into one of them, they still remember old school.
After seeing your trapping bag, you are definitely old school, I would say.
Yeah.
And he's got some old school tricks, too.
Yeah, he does. He does. There's nothing he doesn't have in that trailer. I think he could like rebuild an engine and you know, probably has some stuff you could do a brain surgery with out there.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah. You know, he's been packing for 2 days.
Four.
Well, two that I saw, because I've been trying to stay out of the way.
He had all the stuff outside the trailer. Jeff threatened to put a sign at the highway saying that there's a flea market. And then we pulled out of the driveway and Jeff says he looks like a darn tailgater at a convention.
That's what you look like, sitting up. All that stuff spread out on both sides.
Well, I've tried going short.
And you had good stuff, though.
Usually, I run into trouble because sometimes I get extra ranches just out of a clear blue sky. Some of them are little, but I still take them. And if I don't have enough snares and stuff, it makes me look bad. So I make sure I got an off good hole for my snares to cover and enough tricks up my sleeve to catch an animal or two.
Well, we had to go over to the trailer quite a few times to get things we needed.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we did. We were.
I told Jeff, I said, I don't mind helping, not one bit, because, you know, I'd rather have you bring the stuff, and so we get in a pickle. We've got it, which we were.
Quite a few times.
Quite a few times.
Yeah, we had to borrow Bobcat flags and drags and
cable cutters. We had to borrow cable cutters.
I'm a trapper. I mean, I'm not a snare guy, so I use split rings.
Until we tried to get the first raccoon out of the snare and
had to leave it hanging there.
Yeah, we didn't have cable cutters.
I had 3 pair. Yep. I always try to carry at least 2 of everything. Because I know I'm going to lose them or break them.
Well, on this trip, I broke my hammer. The head fell off. I broke my driver, which was surprising. Well, it was a hammer-down driver I broke. But the abuse I put that thing through, I can't believe it even lasted. Any of the regular ones would have just broke right away.
Then you lost a hammer. Then you found it.
Well, but then I walked in there, set the trap, and the head had fell off. I didn't know it, so I took the driver part and beat on that to put my set in, and then the head wouldn't go back on, or I could have fixed it. So technically, it was my fault that it didn't work no more. But then I lost my whisk broom a couple times.
Sifter is falling apart.
Yeah, my sifter's falling apart.
But,
Basically everything of mine's all busted up. This has been a tough.
It's tough. It's been so tough.
it's been tough. But that ground is so damn rough down here. And, I mean, it's like I told you before we come down here. I said, some of that ground you get in, it's like when you go to dig it out, it's like lava. You can't sift it, and it's great big nuggets, you know, like the, I mean, it's just like pebbles, like mud pebbles.
Yeah, I didn't quite know what he's talking about, and then me and Albert made a set, and he came in at lunch, and he's talking about nailing down his traps. I could not picture that in my brain. I could not picture, how do you nail down a trap? In my mind, I'm thinking he's like, seriously nailing down the trap, and I'm like, well, what happens when it gets caught? Well, the trap just comes up, he says. Anyway, I couldn't figure it out, so we went to a spot, and it was that lava type dirt where it just comes up in giant chunks.
You can't bed a trap in that.
Could not get that trap bedded, and Albert says, let's just nail it down. So I learned how to do that. Can you describe it to somebody that maybe not know what it means?
Well, it's originally called power bedding, and I didn't come up with it. But I couldn't get there the way they powered it. I think it was Jim Condor from up Ohio. He wrote a book, and in there he was talking about that. And I seen him do demos at the convention up there in Ohio. And so I run around with him all through the convention, me and Charlie. And we watched him do it lots of time. But he would use a wooden stake on the next to the trigger, where the trigger comes over, where it's fastened. And he'd use a brain spouting nail, long one on the bottom end, right where the base plate comes out to a point. The head of the nail catches that. I always like to drive that first, then I take the other, and I use a nail on the other side where he used the wooden. I tried that, and I ended up catching my thumb, and I need to go get stitches, but I ain't going to get it. I'm going to black tape it up a little bit, electrician tape, and keep right on going. It was sore for several months, but I survived. And I just started putting a nail on there, and I just catch it where that dog clasp. I just caught the corner of it with the head of that nail, and it's just as solid as can be. It don't hesitate to trap at all. Charlie was there with me, and I called him. Charlie said, "How you getting along with your power bed?" He had a few choice words I'll not repeat, and I told him how I'd done it. And a couple of weeks later, I was talking to him. He said, "I'm doing all right now," and he was catching coyotes in the wintertime, power bedding these traps. And I've been doing, that's one of my little tricks. I don't talk about too much, but they work. Mm-hmm. I've power bed many traps in grass and just sprinkle just a little bit of grass over it. Like Zagger does, I don't put that screen on there. I just put a little bit of grass, put whatever pipe dream out there or a toy I got, what the thing I call toy or whatever you want. And you'll come back, it'll be standing there. And it works. Freezing, it don't seem to bother.
Yeah, it was solid. Yep.
Yeah, there's no way to get it solid other than that.
Yep.
Because you're not packing that in. Most of the dirt down here, you can't hardly pack in.
Didn't Clint, Clint looked at your power bedded trap and he couldn't believe how solid it was.
Yeah, I went to his advanced trapping school the first time. It was up there, and it was about midweek or so. He took us all out, his group out, and he told us, showed us different sets. He said, "I want you to go make two sets, and then when I come back, I'm going to examine every one, and I'm going to tear them apart. I just want you to know that's to make them good." And he was going up there, and he come to mine, and he started pulling the dirt away and pulling on the trap. He said, "It's like it was nailed down." I said, "It is, Clint. Just look a little closer." And I brushed the dirt away and showed him where the nails were. He couldn't believe it. Of course, all the other students come up. Some of the students asked me, said, "Can I use it?" I said, "If you can do it, you can use it." And I've had guys call me this year, maybe last year or year before that. He said, "I was at your school, or the school with Clinton." He said, "When you showed that power, he said, I still do it today." Mm-hmm. So little tricks like that add up. Another guy's on his trap sprung and stuff because he didn't get it good and solid. You stand there with the animal.
And that's some of the stuff like going to the conventions and stuff like that, you know, that you can pick up from, you know, somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, but if somebody comes up with something new, I'm going to look at it. I might not agree with it, but if I can figure out a way to use it, I want to. Maybe I can't do the same thing they did. Can't make it work. But if I fool with it enough, maybe you can come up with a trick or two and make it work.
That's funny that Clint, you know, said, "This looks like it's nailed down." I can just see him doing that.
I can too.
But I never wrote a book or an article or anything. I mean, I didn't try to claim anything off anybody else. I tell everybody where I seen it at, if I seen it. I see something and I can't make it work the way they do. Maybe I can't weld, I can't do this or that. But I figured out a way to take shortcuts.
Mm-hmm. You're always learning. I mean, it's evident by the schools that you went to. You're always learning. And you don't have Facebook. You don't do social media. So, you know, take that out of the equation, which a lot of us are on social media. You know, you're just old school. I mean, you're reading articles.
Yeah.
You're going to conventions. You're going to schools. You're asking questions and, you know, always learning. And
I always try to think of something on my own to come up with.
Mm-hmm. You see a problem and how can you fix it or make it better or
yeah,
make it work for you or, yep.
I Yeah, I, it's like you going out and coming down here all them years, and you know, it's like you've seen, you know, a lot of them guys come and go, and that's why I told you. I said, did you, you know, ever think that you, you know, you'd be the last one standing out of the, you know, the whole group? And you know, I mean, it's amazing that, you know, all the people that had, that Clint, you know, brought down and had trapped with them and stuff. It, you know, that you're the last one, you know, that's still standing doing it down in Texas. And you know, and the other thing, it was is a real testament to Clint. You know, I'll always be grateful to him for this. Is that like when we were in Arkansas, you know, 2 weeks ago, it's like every single Tim Roper was there. You know, Carl and Liz, me and Sarah, Alan Sayer, you know, other than Jeff Haggerty, every single person at that table and every single person at this table, I'm friends with them because of Clint Locklear. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he put a lot of people together that are still friends.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's a real testament to him that, you know, that he's off doing his own thing and we're still all friends and doing stuff together. And, you know,
he surrounded himself with, you know, good people and, treated people good.
So that's it's pretty amazing that, you know, he put all them people together and they're all such good friends.
Well, so you've been trapping for a long time, Mr. Albert.
Yeah.
If somebody is listening to this podcast that is just getting started trapping or interested in trapping, what advice do you have for them that are, you know, you're just starting out and it's a lot to take in, and how do you you always have some words of wisdom.
If I had to start over again, I would definitely take instructions from good people that have a good reputation, because it'll take you a lot less time to learn doing that. It's worth the money instead, trying to figure it out yourself, because you're wasting a lot of time and a lot of money buying this stuff you don't need. Just still go take the instructions off good people, and you'll be way ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I mean, like you said with the Zagger example, I mean, until you get your hands on it with somebody hands-on, really understand it, I think it's a lot better off.
Yeah, there's a lot of people still out there that'll train you, take you to school and teach you. You know, you gotta just spend a little time with them, and they're worth the money.
Mm-hmm. Ask questions. You're always asking questions.
Yeah. I couldn't get enough to read anything about trapping. The old federal trappers and stuff, I love reading stuff about how they did it. How they made their poisons and stuff, all them pills they throw it out there, all that stuff. I enjoy that. Of course, we can't use it, but I enjoy learning about it. Maybe I can find something that the coyote likes. Maybe it won't kill him, but he'll get his mouth on it, and he ain't going nowhere because he's going to be standing in my trap.
Mm-hmm.
Like my toy.
Yep. Your toy. But, do you want to talk about your toy, or is that a trick for your bag?
I take him little white dog bones. They look like a bow tie that canines like. A lot of people give them their dog to chew on stuff. But I bought a small ones, and I was playing with them, and I could get the coyotes to take a hold of them, but I wasn't using the bone. I was using just the long sticks. They're like three in a pack. I'd cut them maybe in three pieces, and I'd try taking a snare wire and wiring them down, stuff. But they'd come to it and take it, but they'd chew my snare wire too. So the more I fooled with it, and I heard Clint and Randy Smith, he was talking about going out to Maryland trapping fox and stuff, and they talk about them
geese heads, a lot of them, they go where they were shooting them ducks and stuff. They get the heads. That's all that Clinton them wanted. They go out there, wire them down, set a trap, and catch a red fox. When he said that, I read his article and stuff. When he got the, that's what I done. Only I made me a little short snare and put an earth anchor on the bottom. I use them Berkshire disposables. And my snare's probably about 6 inches long. And I put a snare swivel on the other end of it. And I wire my little bone to it, bow tie or whatever you want to call them. And you can set them anywhere. I like to put them on cattle paths. And sometimes I just put them right in the middle. He can't help but see it. And I put a trap on one side, about 6 inches back. And usually they're standing there in a day or two. I've caught hundreds of them like that over the lifetime. And I've set lots of them. You can just set them off a little bush or cow patty or something. That white sticks out if it ain't snowing. And use good lure bait. I change it all around. I don't just use one. I might set 20 of them in an area when I go to Montana. I'll be in a big pasture or wheat field or where they've already cut the wheat or pasture field. And I might have 20 of them sitting around there. Maybe around the pond or rock pile or something. That's one of my number one things in Montana. And down here, if I was setting a lot of footholds, I'd be using it. I usually hang snare instead.
Yeah, I looked in your buggy. I remember the first couple of days, you know, I looked in your buggy and you had these bow tie bones. They're like a rawhide milk bones. And I was like, what in the world is this? And you gave me one and I went out and set it. And I had missed a coyote on it. I mean, plain and simple, I missed a coyote. I mean, the tracks were right there. Just missed the pan. I mean, it was on the jaw, missed the pan. And then he didn't come back.
Yeah, it set up too close. Because you come back and ask over the bottom. It was too close.
Too close, so anyway.
You sit back 6-8 inches, you'll be all right. Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, one thing that, you know, you just pick up little stuff like that. That, you know, a lot of people, you know, I mean, you see somebody out there trapping with a dog bone, you know, rawhide bone, you know, and people laugh. But, you know, this stuff works. And, you know, the visual, they're not scared of it. And you put some bait and lure on it. And
it holds lure very well.
It does. I was really surprised.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're trapping in 96-degree heat...
It looks weird as hell when you pull up there for a few times and see that, and I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
I just think of Albert every time.
You know, you just keep setting. If somebody you pull up, there'll be a big old coyote standing there.
Yep.
One that got educated on a dirt hole or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or a flat set.
No, because, I mean, they like chewing on that type of stuff. I mean, that's, you know, what they like.
And like Albert said, the key to it is it's tied down. They can't get that.
Yeah.
No matter how hard they try. I mean, they can't pull that out of the ground. They can't undo it. They have to work that set if they want it.
The ones I said, I put like Heartbreaker, smeared that all over them, or Soul Taker, and you know, you got to put something on there that they want to eat. You know, I mean, if you want to put shellfish oil, you know, something like that that's a synthetic that would be taste nasty, and you know, that wouldn't work as well. But I thought it was a great idea. I like stuff like that. I'm a lot like Clint is, you know, where you're always looking for something else because. It's like you go out and just set just, like, you know, down here we had 100 and some footholds out. You know, if you just went out and just made dirt holes and then you come back and remake dirt holes and then down here the dirt holes fall in every single time. I can't say I never will, but I don't think I'll ever make another dirt hole down here.
Well, our drill was shot. Our drill broke as well, so it was hard to even
Yeah, broke the drill. But I mean, even when you could drill them out, that ground is so dry that you would just fall in on your bait. You know, and as a bait and lure maker, I learned a lot down here. As a trapper, I learned a lot. But that's what I like about the, coming to places like this. It's extreme place to trap. I mean, it's like Alaska on the other end, and I like that. And I mean, that's when you learn stuff is, when, you're in a tough environment, and and here you got enough coyotes, you can see reactions to stuff, and it's definitely an awesome place.
You say, well, bobcat trapping is easy. Well, go out and target 100 bobcats and catch 100 bobcats.
Or 200.
Or 200. or 326 coyotes like Albert did. Then you start questioning everything you're doing and taking a serious look at what you're doing and why you're doing it. And, and that doesn't happen by accident or luck. You got to...
and you start putting cameras on stuff, even then, you're having, a lot of stuff walk by. The percentage of what you actually catch, even high number stuff is, because we won't say who, but we had friends buy a camera, the cameras. They seen us using them, and they bought cameras, and now they have coyotes. They had coyotes walking by the set, but you don't know it, I mean, you have a trap out. You check it today, tomorrow you don't have nothing. You check it for 3 days, you don't have nothing. Then the fourth or fifth day, you caught a coyote. So that's the first one that came along. But when you put a camera on it, and the coyotes have walked by your set for three times, before you even had them walk up to your set, it changes your like at first, with trapping otters, when we got the first big in beaver, if you put the conibears on land, that they didn't really want to go through them. They go around them all night long, so mentally it's like, oh my gosh, how are we going to fix this? And, it takes time to readjust and figure it out. It took a whole year, for us to figure, it out. But, our friends' minds blown. And I know they're like, just laying there thinking about these coyotes.
You remember when they first got their first picture? I think there was a hog on there, and they're like, "We got a hog! We got a hog! It's on my camera!" Yeah. I'm like, "Do you have like 100 pictures of the hog?" "No, one." I said, "Yeah, it walked by."
It went right around the snare. Yeah, but it takes the time to get your mind wrapped around that. You're not catching everything you're not catching most stuff that goes by.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun. I mean, if you knew every single thing about trapping, it wouldn't be fun anymore. I mean, it's fun to come up with different tricks and different techniques and stuff, and that's what I like.
Well, on that note, what else you got planned for the year, Albert? I think you're going to some conventions, you mentioned.
Yeah, be going to Fur Takers for one. That'll probably be the first one to start with. Then from there on, we'll just see which ones look good to go to. Mm-hmm. See who's going there to put demos on.
Yep.
The Fur Takers ought to be a pretty good one for demos and stuff.
Yeah.
Yep, it'll be about that time.
It's getting closer. Yeah. It's getting a lot closer to convention. I can't believe it's almost convention season again. Seems like we just got done and started trapping. We've been on the go all year trapping. But yeah, it's time to head home and grind up some muskrats.
Maybe catch a few beaver if there's any left.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a crazy year. We'll definitely catch some. But they've been beating on them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, normally they ain't even broke up yet. Now the season's almost over. Yeah. They're caught them all.
60 degrees back home and basically summer.
Yeah, usually right now there's 2 foot of ice at home. You know, they're driving trucks on it, ice fishing, and nope, not this year. But the beaver won't. That's the thing is we were talking about like the learning. You know, the thing is what triggers them beaver? See, that's the thing I never thought of before is, you know, it's like everything's open. But what triggers them beaver to start kicking them 2-year-olds out and, you know, get them where they go start looking for their own pond? It can't be just the flooding. I mean, is it the amount of daylight, something triggering their brain, there's something. I just don't know what it is, but it's made me start thinking about, you know, what triggers them.
Do they kick them out right before breeding season?
That could be, you know. Well, it had to be before because they'll start having, they'll be close to having pups in April where we're at, you know. So
so be breeding.
It must be when that female reaches a certain part, you know, right after breeding, when she's bred, it's, you know, maybe she kicks them out. I'm not sure. I don't have an answer. It's all speculation, but. It's interesting of, you know, I've always wondered, like, up there in Michigan, it's like on Lake Huron, them rats will, they won't, like, a season opens November 1st, a lot of times they don't even start building their house till then. But if you go inland 15 miles, they'll start building houses, you know, even in September sometimes, you know, so... Why on Lake Huron, where, you know, a lot of times they don't build the houses till later on a bigger body of water, you know. But lots of questions to be answered.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks for having us down over, and thanks for doing the podcast. And if you want to meet Albert, he'll be at Fur Takers, and hopefully we'll get him to come hang out at our booth. So
absolutely.
So stop by and tell him hi.
I just got one thing to say. Set the snares and the foot out, and they will come.
Yep.
Sounds good.
And hopefully they don't leave.
Right.
They'll come. Nothing's guaranteed.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.